It's our pleasure again to continue the series of tapes which are being produced for the State Archives in Frankfort, for the Marshall County Library, and for the Pogue Oral History Library at Murray State University. I'm Ray Mofield, sitting in with Shelby McCallum, and WCBL is sponsoring this entire series. Our guest today is Mr. Alfred Joyce, a citizen of Marshall County for a good many years, although he really wasn't born here. Of course, that's not a requirement. And we want to ask him a good many things about the county in earlier days. We won't ask him his age. He might be embarrassed by that. But I do know that he's in World War I, and we want to say a few things about that. Welcome to our microphone, Mr. Joyce.
Thank you.
Where were you born?
Turkey Creek, Trigg County.
That's sort of in the Golden Pond area?
That's in the Golden Pond area, yes.
Who were your parents?
James Joyce and Henrietta Compton Joyce.
And do you remember enough to go back another generation? Do you know who your grandparents were?
Yes, I know my grandparents quite well on my mother's side.
Well, your mother was a Compton, I take it?
Compton, yes. And
her parents were?
Gibson Compton, and she was raised by her grandmother, her mother having passed away when she was an infant. And all of her life was spent between the rivers, it was known as at that time. And her father, Gibson Compton, served in the during the Civil War in the 13th Kentucky Volunteer Infantry, and saw service at Shiloh, Gettysburg, Lookout Mountain, Fort Donelson, and numerous other places. And his older brother, who was in favor of slavery, served in the Confederate Army. So it was one of those divided families.
Fairly typical of Kentucky.
Fairly typical of Western Kentucky at that time.
Yes, sir.
Because it was that area was definitely divided between slavery and a free state.
And so you heard many stories as you were growing up about those early days.
Many of them, yes.
Well, do you have any further linkage back to, do you have any idea of your, where your great-great-grandparents came from, maybe? Were they originally from England or Ireland or Scotland, or?
On my father's side, they came from Ireland and settled in North Carolina, migrated from North Carolina to Knoxville, Tennessee, and then from Knoxville, Tennessee to the area known as between the rivers at that time.
Well, that, of course, we might have guessed Joyce would have been an Irish name. After all, one of the greatest writers in all history, James Joyce.
I'm Shelby McCallum. I'd like to ask Mr. Joyce if he can give us any humorous incidents or tell us something about how life was back when you were very young in the land between the lakes. It must have been pretty isolated.
It was definitely isolated, and the only means of marketing any merchandise or produce the farmers produced was either by the Cumberland River boats to Nashville, Tennessee, or Paducah, Kentucky, or the on the Tennessee River to either Paducah or Metropolis. There were no bridges across either river at that time. The only means of getting out was by ferry boat, and that was not the most outlandish experience at any time, crossing those rivers, especially during the winter seasons.
Of course, it could hardly be much more isolated than the Purchase. We were almost an island, except for the going to Tennessee.
How about communications? Did you? I know you didn't have telephones, because Don Amici had not invented the telephone at that time. But But how about mail? Did you have regular mail service?
We had what they call the star route, that is going from one post office to another. Now, there was the mail would come to Golden Pond from Cadiz by hack, they called it at that time, horse-drawn vehicles. And from Golden Pond, it would be by carrier from there to, well, it'd start out down the Cumberland River. The first stop would be Blight, B-L-E-I-D-T, and then, then Energy. And then later it extended to Ironton, Fenton, and back to Golden Pond. Then in later years, they established two rural routes. One, Route 1, it went up to, in the Pleasant Hill area, and the other is went down through down the Tennessee River watershed to Ironton, cross and back up through Energy, back in to Golden Pond.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go to school?
I went to school at, the old one-room school at Pleasant Valley, which was the last log schoolhouse in Kentucky in use.
Say, that's an interesting idea. What were the schools like? Were they sort of like Abraham Lincoln's day, the Blab School, where you went up to the front and recited? And
that is right. They had up until, I would say, around 1916, there was no program of continuity. That is, each school had its own program and taught in its own manner, whatever it desired. But then they established, in 1916, the Department of Education established what they call the course of study. And that kind of solidified the entire school system throughout Kentucky.
I'd like to ask one more question I think will be of interest. You are married to a former Mrs. Nichols, another very distinguished family and an old family in Marshall County. Courtship, I know, has changed. I've heard my late friend Dr. Faust talk about it. Today they go together 3 days, they get married, and then they get a divorce. I would like to know, what was courtship like, and when did you meet Miss Nichols? And how long was your courtship, and what was it sort of like in those days?
Well, we met in Bowling Green in 1917, and, we dated a few times during the two semesters we were there in 1917, and then the last semester ended in June, so we kind of drifted apart until 1918.
Was that because you went into the service?
I was in service at the time. Well, we just didn't correspond or anything after we left school. But in the early part of 1918, one of the boys from Golden Pond who was in the service at Camp Taylor passed away, and there was quite a write-up in the papers about his passing and so forth, and in that article it mentioned my name as being in service with him at the time. And the first correspondence we had was a letter that I had from her addressed to me at Golden Pond with instructions.
In other words, she was chasing you.
I wouldn't make that statement. It was a pleasure to get the letter. Well, she addressed the letter to me at Golden Pond to be forwarded to me. Of course, the postmaster, mistress, who was Mrs. Bogard at Golden Pond, knew where I was. So the letter came to me. Then we kept up a lively correspondence all the time I was in service, even overseas. And I was overseas almost a year, and
Tell us a little more about your Army experience. You hadn't been very far away from home, probably, when you went into service, had you?
Well, the furthest I had been away from home was Bowling Green.
Where did you train in this country?
at Camp Taylor.
Near Louisville.
Near Louisville, yes. Mm-hmm. And we were transferred from Louisville. I was in the 84th Division at that time.
What branch were you? Artillery?
Infantry.
Infantry.
Infantry with mud behind my ears. That was a designation they used with the infantry because they were the...
The AEF, they didn't call them GIs, they called them doughboys.
Doughboys.
As a matter of interest, those trenches are still there. I've been over there several times.
Did you fight in what general sector of France, was it?
In France, yes. In northern France. Our first fighting was up in Belgium, around Mount Kemmel, or Kemmel Hill, as we called it, Wipers. Some said Wipers, some said Ypres. Anyway, it was a sizable city in Belgium that was completely leveled from an explosion. And our first fighting was up in there. We were in the trenches there from May, first part of May until Labor Day, and we came out and did some preliminary training in conjunction with tanks.
And that was the first battle in which tanks were used.
On the Somme front.
That is right.
And the British introduced them.
Yeah, Hindenburg Line. Now we had assigned to our sector of 4,000 yards of Hindenburg Line, which is supposed to have been fortified to the extent it could not be penetrated. Anyway, we had three tanks. One, why it was ever painted red, I'll never know. But anyway, and its name had printed on each side of it in very bold letters, Old Hell.
Well.
And it could go down in a trench, turn over, crawl back out on the same side it went in on, and come back down and turn back and go on through. And those tanks cut lanes through this barbed wire. It's three columns of barbed wire. The center column was charged with 6,000 volts. And when the artillery was concentrated on them in the front line trenches, these tanks cut through this barbed wire, and we went through the lanes that were cut out. And the instructions were, I remember quite well, that we were to advance a certain distance and lie flat until the barrage was lifted. But we got a little fast and forgot about that. And when the barrage was lifted, we were in enemy front line trenches. And the shells were exploding just about like a popcorn popper when the corn was popping. And but even at that, we probably were lucky because the Germans, the Krauts as we called them, along with a lot of other names, as soon as the barrage was lifted, came up out of their dugouts, set up their machine guns. Of course, they would have just mowed us down. But we met them when they came out of their dugouts, and of course they surrendered. And I just happen to have a picture of when I was in the midst of it.
Mr. Joyce is getting out his photograph now. When he shows us that, I'm going to ask him a little bit later if life in the trenches was as terrible as it was depicted with the cooties and the fleas and so on. Isn't that a handsome young man? Let's see that, Shelby.
And no wonder Mrs. Joyce was writing him letters, yeah.
And of course,
that was
fully outfitted with the typical...
gas mask, revolver, rifle. The bolo you can't see. I had a bolo that was a knife, a blade about 4 inches wide.
And you wrapped your legs in the...
The Germans were short on cotton, and we didn't dare wear anything in cotton because they've used it in making gun cotton. So we wore, those were wool.
Made out of wool.
Yeah.
And you
hobnailed shoes.
Had the typical... doughboy helmet, much flatter than World War II.
Well, we call them tin hats.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they appear to be. Well, getting back to this question, as Mr. Joyce puts his pictures away, I know they're great treasures to him and to his wife. What about life in those trenches? Did you get any flea powder or so
you
on?
You know, you just, you dare, at first, you dare not stick your head up above the parapet of the trench.
Snipers would
pick you off. And the cooties, we call them, were almost unbearable. The biting wasn't so bad, but their traveling expenses were terrific. So, and the life wasn't anything to be enjoyed when you were in trench warfare. But after we broke through the Hindenburg Line, and we had driven the Germans back about 19 miles, and then we were completely out of the trench system, and more or less open warfare. But we still had cooties, because I think that every barn in the entire area was infested with
cooties. You just slept on farms and haystacks?
Barns, anything. You would run the cows out and take over.
Do you want to know the history of the cootie? Adam,
I would appreciate knowing it, yes. All I know him as pest.
Yeah. Well, how long were you in Europe altogether?
11 months.
And then the armistice came, and how long did it take before you...
Well, the armistice was there on November the 11th, and we sailed for the United States the following April 1st out of St. Nazaire, France, and arrived back in Charleston, South Carolina, 13 days later.
Then you were back home and repatriated to Western Kentucky, and... what about Miss Joyce?
Well, we kind of ceased correspondence temporarily, but we got back together.
And you were married when?
Were married in 1924.
Well, you didn't just marry instantly. Shelby said they courted 3 days now.
I was wondering. I understand that. Dr. Faust said things moved a little slower.
Well, you might say our courtship lasted over a period of 7 years, 1970,
1970. Now, to kind of telescope this and give us a broad outline of your life since that time, you married in 24. Where did you work, and when did you come back to Marshall County?
Well, when I graduated from college in June of 21.
That was Bowling Green?
Bowling Green, yes. And they sent Mrs. Joyce, Miss Nichols at that time, they sent her to Akron, Ohio, and sent me to Portland, Oregon, where I worked for 2 years. And I came back to Akron and was with the Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company as secretary of the master mechanic for a time. Then I finally had drifted around and had a desire to get into transportation. So in 1933, I joined up with Roadway Express and served in almost every capacity with the company, and with the company for 30 years.
Still one of the major truck lines.
It is one of the biggest now. And I was with the company for the 30 years, retiring January the 1st of 1963, and then proceeded to move, to get ready to move to Kentucky, building a new home and everything.
And you live down toward Sharp?
Yeah.
What is that, the Clark Road?
Between Palmer and Sharp.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask one final question. You've had a very interesting life, and a lot of historic events have occurred during your lifetime. Are you pretty well satisfied with the life you've lived up to now, or would you do things differently?
Well, I don't know whether I would do things differently or not. I'm reasonably well satisfied with my accomplishments in life.
I think that's fine.
I think we have been well blessed in many different ways. Mrs. Joyce has a very wonderful family, and I love them all dearly. And as we had no children of our own, but we managed to help nieces and nephews through college that otherwise wouldn't have made it. And we have been repaid many, many times over by their success in life. So all in all, it has been an enjoyable life. And so many people talk about the good old days. I've enjoyed these days much more than I did the so-called good old days.
Well, I know you have a very comfortable home now. I, for one, have enjoyed its hospitality, and I've eaten Ms. Nichols' snickerdoodles and so on, and some of her Christmas parties. I know they're great. But since Shelby's brought up life, could you just sort of give us a capsule history of what the things in life that have changed so much? And today you drive a nice automobile. How did you start out?
I started out in an old road wagon without a spring seat.
I know what that was.
And over an unimproved road, in the summertime, the dust would stifle you to death, and in the wintertime, the mud would choke you to death. The roads were unimproved at that time, and the social activities were somewhat limited to parties and such as that. But there was usually church to attend on a regular basis. And
I believe you are a religious man, Mr. Joyce.
On both sides of the family, mm-hmm. have been very devout all the years.
And were the sermons any longer then than they are now?
Well, as I remember, they were. And much louder.
Yeah. Abraham Lincoln, I read in his biography where they asked him what kind of preaching he liked, and he said he liked them to fight bees. That gives me a picture, perhaps, of pioneer preachers. They really got enthused.
And one of the traditions over between the rivers at that time was Brush Harbor meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And usually a very outstanding evangelist would conduct these meetings. And at the same time, there was a certain amount of comedy occasionally, and but you dare not laugh. On one occasion, this Brush Harbor was built on a kind of a sloping ground, and the minister was supposed to down at the lower end. In order to be seen by everybody, he was standing on a barrel, and he was laying it off with both hands, right and left. And he says, "You see me now, and sooner you'll see me no more." Stamped his foot, and the bed of the barrel went down, and there he was, his head sticking out the barrel.
The prophecy came true a little more rapidly than he anticipated.
That's one of the comic happenings of the Brush Harbor meetings.
Well, Mr. Joyce, we have perhaps five more minutes left, and in that period we'll get in anything you want to cover, but if you don't think of anything at the moment, I'd like to ask you, when you were growing up, about the medical care and so on, did you ever hang a bag of asafoetida around your neck?
Many times, much to my regrets.
It didn't smell the best.
It didn't smell the best, and castor oil didn't taste the best either. But those quinine, asafoetida, and castor oil were the outstanding remedies, and that was good. Those were good for everything, no matter what.
Yeah, cure-alls. Yeah.
While we've got more time, I said I was going to quit, but I know the railroads had a great impact on this area. Can you just give us briefly what, in your opinion, the railroads coming through this country meant to the society?
Well, and now, as in the area where I was raised, the railroads didn't do us any good whatever. We still had to depend on river traffic. But other than after I began to travel around, I found the railroads to be quite convenient And the service back then was really outstanding. I know when I left this area going to the Northwest, those transcontinental trains, they were known as that time, were really rolling palaces to a country boy that had never seen anything like that before, and through the Rockies. But the most of the, just to sum up the whole thing, the things, the changes I have seen over these years, from the horse and buggy days to the airplanes and automobiles and radio and television, and in the, as far as the armed forces are concerned, and when I first went in, we used horses on the heavy guns that we used, long rifles they were called, 18 to 20 horses to each piece. But along towards the end of the war, we were using power units to handle those big guns. Now, the Australian Commonwealth forces usually put over the barrage, because our artillery was in the southern part of the of France. And one man could drive 20 horses, and they were turned for a trench or anything. Somehow none of those horses would jump those trenches. Then, of course, when we started using power equipment, it was different. Then, along towards the end of the war, we began using oral communication. Radio, we call it wireless telegraph, but it was actually oral. And when they were getting ready to sign the armistice, I know I was on duty at that time, and I picked up the message that the emissaries were coming through the lines to sign the armistice as outlined by General Pershing. And those things were really outstanding developments that I remember very distinctly.
Well, I guess the railroad came to Paducah first about 1854, and the line up to Louisville, now known as the Illinois Central, served just a little tip around Calvert City for quite a while. The road through Benton didn't come till 1890. But you talked about the service was good. There were six trains a day, three north and three south, on the line that ran from Brewston, Tennessee to Paducah, first known as the Paducah, Tennessee and Alabama, and then was bought by the Nashville, Chattanooga and St. Louis, where it remained until the L&N took it over, and now they've even paved the crossing. It's a little bit sad to me. Well, it's been a real pleasure. As a final statement, we have about 2 minutes left, Mr. Joyce. Would you like to say anything particular about your life, either now or in the past? That
Well, nothing other than we originally from this area, lived in Akron, Ohio for a good many years, and moved back to the, this part of the state in December of 1963, and the past 19 years have been extremely enjoyable, and we have enjoyed it immensely, and enjoyed all the friendship and all the good things of life that Western Kentucky can afford.
Well, thank you very much. We're certainly delighted today to have had Alfred Joyce and in the studio with us as we've been taping this, his lovely wife, as you were told, the former Mrs. Nichols, and Shelby McCallum, who is sponsoring the entire series for WCBL on behalf of the State Archives in Frankfort, the Murray State University Pogue Library, and the Marshall County Library, of course, the primary beneficiary. And all of those will receive copies of the tape and will be available to scholars or interested persons who are attempting to save, by this oral method, the culture of the past in Marshall County. I'm Ray Mofield, and that is our program for today.